Good morning, everyone. This narrative offers how more swans came to the lake, of how the Asian contemplative arts became a part of Shambhala through Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche's vast work when he lived in the West. By piecing together parts of conversations that I had with Shibata Sensei the 20th and other people's memories, it's more or less accurate. Chögyam Trungpa was seeking out a living example of warriorship, and it's likely he had already met Suzuki Roshi. At one point, Chögyam Trungpa connected with Roshi, asking if he knew a living example of warriorship in Japan. And now I have to cut over to some background events in order to make this narrative sensible. A Japanese monk was invited by Suzuki Roshi to be his personal assistant at Tassajara Zen Center. This must have been in the late 60s. The monk's name was Kobunchino Otogawa, later known to us and many as Kobunchino Roshi. Roshi, by the way, is a title given to a person who has received transmission and is certified to teach the way of the Buddha within the Zen world. Suzuki Roshi asked Kobunchino Roshi if he knew a genuine warrior practitioner still living in Japan. Not an old veteran from World War II, of course, but one who embodied the way, that of which was being taught by Chögyam Trungpa via the Shambhala teachings. Kobunchino Roshi did know someone. Now I have to go back in time again. Kobunchino Roshi had met a living warrior early on in his years of Buddhist study and practice. In the Japanese Zen world, when you decide or it's decided for you to become a Buddhist teacher, a lineage holder due to family obligations, a person must complete many steps in a particular order, starting with attending a Buddhist or secular university to study just Buddhist history, Chinese, Japanese script, and doctrinal philosophy. Then, after graduating from university, you need to find an established temple abbot or master to be accepted as his disciple. It's at this point that the young monk is introduced to the practice of meditation, and simultaneously the novice's actions are carefully monitored to follow the temple's strict practice for every part of daily life from morning to night. By this point, Kobunchino had taken refuge vows, shaved his head, and had been ordained to follow the way guided by the superiors within the temple in which he was accepted. After long practical and ritual training, he received transmission and certification to take full responsibility as a Roshi. He could either stay in the temple he was training in, or find another, or establish one on his own. It was during this time in university, or temple training, or both, that Kobunchino sought a way to deal with his highly agitated monkey mind. Someone referred him to Shibata Sensei the 20th, Kyudo master and bow maker to the Emperor of Japan, and he requested to be Sensei's student. Sensei did accept him, and forever after, at a certain point, both of these powerful teachers never knew who was at the top of their two-person hierarchical connection within their long, deep, respectful, loving relationship of each other. This all took place in Kyoto, the old historical capital of Japan, where the Shibata family had lived for over 500 years. Then in the early 70s, Chögyam Trungpa sent a two-person envoy, Nicholas Sabroka and Robert Halpern, to Japan with the invitation for Shibata Sensei the 20th to please join him and teach Kyudo at a three-month Buddhist seminary in the United States. Shibata Sensei accepted and arrived with his wife and adopted son, who came to help both teach Kyudo and translate for his parents. Mrs. Shibata taught at the seminary the Way of Flowers, known as Ikebana in Japan, Kado in China, and Chado, the way of tea. Thus, a true living warrior with profound roots deep from the Asian world was found. Shibata Sensei the 20th taught many Western students and was a poignant, fearless example, giving heart's blood to the Shambhala teachings, as did Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche himself. There were many seeds sown of other contemplative Asian arts about the same time that carried the secret to opening the human heart to its true essence, the way of flowers, the way of tea, brush, etc. All began to find roots in Shambhala soil. All the contemplative arts brought to Shambhala had their origin in China, but many only survived in Japan because much civil war took place in China during its very long history, so many arts died out. All of them were steeped in Taoist view, which was to understand the way of the universe and live your life accordingly by following the Tao and not just your personal choices or whims. Thus the word Tao or Do at the end of each discipline's name. All were pointing to the true way. For example, the way of the bow, Kyudo, the way of the flower, Kado, the way of tea, Chado, the way of the sword, Kendo, the way of the brush, Shodo, the way of incense, Kodo, etc. The Tao arts were intended to train and open people to trust their innate knowing rather than to live just by obeying cultural, conceptual, man-made rules or law. They were intended to include the heart in movement, change, and decisions, not to just rely on thinking mind. These arts were intended to sharpen people's sensibility, to let the cloudy waters of the mind settle, quoting Lao Tzu, to let the solution arise by itself, to see clearly, to surrender to what was happening now, to choose according to what would produce benefit for all, not only for self. All the Do arts, if taught, understood, and genuinely practiced, can result in pure expression of the way. If the expression is authentic, be it action or no action, the practitioner is the Tao.